Surprisingly, I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to spend the whole weekend fucking playing games and whatever. Played a bit on Friday night, and then Saturday I'm like, yep, nah, doing a pile of washing and, you know, dishes and pottering around the house doing shit. And then Sunday I went out and did the grocery shopping.
The shit I've gotten done around the house is incredible.
And I'm like, fuck man, this is my time. This is my time.
Hello everyone and welcome to Pixelcast 173. My name is Matt Houston and I am here to talk games with all of you people, but it'd be pretty bloody boring if it was just me, so I've dragged three other fine fellows along with me. First, I'm going to introduce the man with the best top knot in the world. It is Sean. How are you going, mate?
Pretty good, but I'm wondering who the hell are these fine gentlemen? I'm rocking a top knot. A gentleman does not rock a top knot.
They do it with style.
Depends on the era. Region and era, look, all appropriate.
At my age, I'm just glad I've still got, you know, I can still grow a full head of hair.
Excellent.
It may be all silver, but, you know, I'll
take it.
Nothing
wrong with that, mate. There is
silver
nothing
fox,
wrong with
silver. Baby.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
You're in
exactly.
Your Clooney years. That's what I keep telling my wife. Next, we have our very favorite master of nostalgia. It is Rob. How you going, mate?
Yeah, good, good, good.
Good, good, good. He's playing a new game, but it is from an old creator. So, you know, it's a bit different, but it's still in his wheelhouse. And we also have the man that's always here. We can't get rid of him. He hangs around like that old lounge that you just can't get rid of no matter what. Tim.
Yeah, man, you got rid of me at PAX.
Oh, one episode, and that's only because you weren't here.
Yeah, it turns out if nobody gives me $2,000 to fly overseas, then I won't turn up.
It's understandable. But anyway, we're here tonight to talk about video games, and the topic this evening is pure action gaming. There's been a couple this year after quite a dry spell in the genre of these linear action titles. So we thought we'd look at the good ones, some favorites from the past, what's happened this year with them, and, you know, all things in between. But in the meantime, we need to talk about the games we have been playing. And we mentioned it briefly in the intro. So, Rob, you're welcoming back an old buddy in Ron Gilbert to his latest game, Death by Scrolling. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so I've been having an eye out of this for a while. And so Death by Scrolling is a little bit of a departure from Gilbert's sort of norms. You know, he's really known for adventure stuff, and this is not really an adventure game. It's basically, the core of it is that it's a sort of roguelike action game. You're a little character. When you start, you start with one character and you can unlock others through getting to certain levels, all that thing. And the idea is that you're in the afterlife, you're in purgatory, not the afterlife, and you're trying to raise 5,000 gold to pay the ferryman to go into the afterlife. And so when you start, the idea is you just run up the screen to the level, and like behind you at the bottom is like the eternal fires of damnation. So you need to avoid that. So while you're running, there are enemies that will attack you and you've got to attack them. You pick up items. So you like weapons, and various buffs. The big thing is all of these have limited uses. So like the weapons, like one initial weapons you'll find is like a sword. There's a crossbow. Later on, there's a shotgun. Normal, like a longbow, a crossbow comes later. There's a cursed chainsaw. There's like fireballs. There's a really wacky, like, assortment of items. There's like there's a pickup that'll give you like a shield that'll take a few hits. There's one that lets you walk on water, which does actually get important when, because you'll find channels of water that you can cross. Oops. And all the way along, while you're running and avoiding enemies, you need to collect gold that enemies will drop when they die, but there's also gold lying about. There are gems that you use to buy, like, permanent upgrade buffs and things like that. And you also need to avoid the Grim Reaper who starts coming after you, which is basically one touch and you're dead. So you get to the end of each little stage, a little moment of respite. You know, you get your usual roguelite three item upgrade thing. You know, things will be like, you can fire more projectiles. There's a greater chance of critical damage when you attack enemies. One of the other pickups you can get is a magnet to suck all the gold in as you get close to it. And so things like that. And you'll get a little quest like, I was having a run earlier tonight, and basically it was, I had to find 12 things of orc poop. So orc's enemy, one of the enemies cool. that you defeat, and had to collect the thing they dropped. Another quest was like finding someone's, like a system disk for their computer.
Right, we just up. Need to pause and say, like, who was the quest giver who asked for the orc poop, and what purpose did they actually need said,
I can't remember the purpose. It was like an old lady.
It's like the clone will just grow better if it's specifically yeah. orc shit that, like, goes in there.
I think it was for, like, some research stuff, if I remember. Oh, I wish I'd taken a screen.
But yeah, you go samples in the orc population is what's happening here.
But yeah, so you go through, and then you get this little sort of, like, peaceful end things where you can get orc turning those quests. You can visit the, like, there's a salesman that sells, like, these permanent upgrades that those gems are for. And then you go through into, like, the next, you get to pick, like, a couple of locales, and you go on, and of course it gets harder and things like that. It's the kind of game that's really good in short bursts. Like right now it's on Steam for everything, Windows, Mac, Linux. And I imagine it's going to be amazing playing on a handheld PC. It's coming to console at some point, like soonish. So I imagine, and it was fairly cheap. I'd almost double dip to have it on Switch.
Yeah, I'm looking, I'm only going to guess it's like $10 Australian at the moment.
Yeah,
like
it was about $10 Australian. So I thought that was a pretty good deal. And it's not a game that's going to, you know, you have massive long sessions. You might have like a 20-minute play once a day, put it down.
Yeah. Come back like and try Steam again. Deck bait if there ever was.
Yeah. it's really well done. Really nice pixel art, some great in-game music that's sort of like really like this kind of rock that kind of pumps the vibe, which initially I didn't think felt right, but no, it actually feels really just right for the pacing of it. It's a very fast, breezy kind of game. And I've been having a really, really good time with it so far.
Nice. So does it have those persistent upgrade systems
yeah.
and things like that?
So,
yeah.
Like you get things like, I think one of the upgrades I've bought was like an extra heart life. Yeah. So you basically, when you take damage, you'll mm-hmm. lose bits of heart, and you can replenish those as you collect it. And thankfully, when you start a new stage, your health bar is refilled. So the game's pretty fair like that.
Yeah. Nice. Does it have that kind of Ron and Gilbert kind of
yeah,
so
any
writing
anyway.
Yeah,
it,
there is.
You know?
There is. So like when you get to like you get to the checkpoint and get to the next stage bit, like you do talk to like there's sort of a person. And it's like the first time it's like, oh, how did you get here so fast? Oh, I teleported. So there's little bits of it. Obviously, it's not as much writing as you'd expect in one of the adventure games, but there's still little bits of it that adds to humor. When you die, there's like a little, there's little bits of text bubbles that come up. It's almost like someone's having a conversation on a Twitter, Blue Sky style social network of like, oh, you could have done this and all this.
Okay.
So it's got the humor in there. It's not as like direct as in the adventures, but it's still in there. It's got the wit in there.
I do feel like the way you describe the Grim Reaper feels like a wasted opportunity. And it may just because it's a Ron Gilbert joint that made me think, it's like, why is he on the regular map? Like, that should be like when you die, you just have like a chance. And it's specifically like a series of Red Dwarf, I think, that came to my head. Yeah. Like, there should be like just a quick time event where you can maybe kick death in the nuts and like come back. It's immediately like kind of what came to mind.
That was Series 7 of Red Dwarf, actually.
Yeah, actually, there is a little bit like in the help menu. It's like there's sort of a description from the company that's running it. I forgot the Purgatory Inc. or whatever, and it's like sort of a bit of the being written by AI, which is obviously not sort yep. of gag in there. The nice. Usual kind of faux welcome. So there's like the humor is in there. It's just like it's not direct, but it's still in there.
Excellent,
it's just like
excellent.
Yeah, I've been having a little ball with it.
And that's a full release. That's not early
that's a
access.
Full release.
Full release. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, cool. So nice and cheap for the budget conscious.
Yeah, awesome. All right, I might add that to my list too because I'm going to jump in here. I'm really addicted to roguelikes at the moment because they seem to fit my lifestyle at the moment with a lot of things going on and in between reviews, and I need a palate cleanser. So I quite often pick a roguelike, and I have been playing one in Deep Rock Galactic Survivors. So if you've heard of Deep Rock Galactic, that's a four-player, first-person shooter kind of mixed with mining, and it's quite a lot of fun. It's kind of Left 4 Dead with this mining element where you take a group of dwarves in space into this kind of area and mine for the corporation, and there's this kind of corporate humor going about these dwarves being, you know, used by the system. And so this is their kind of Vampire Survivors spin-off on that game. And so instead of a four-player...
Yeah, we are at that point. We are at that point in the dev cycles, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. So this one came about, and I thought I'd give it a go. It was on Game Pass, and thought it good. It is honestly the best version of this Vampire Survivors that I've ever played, hands down. It is. It takes that kind of addictive... poker machine style thing going, but then it adds meaning to the levels. It adds a whole bunch of quests within it. It adds goals. You've still got to keep mining. You've got so many different weapons.
Something to do other than not die, because that always drove me
crazy.
Yeah,
there really is. So there's two main mission types. So there's the mining missions where you have to get down through five levels, and each level has mini goals as well. You have to get through five levels. Each level has a boss that you've got to beat. And then the final level, you've got to beat three more of those bosses and then a giant boss. And you're kind of working for the corporation to get rid of these things. But in between it, there's also these other bonus missions, like collect a certain amount of this mineral to, or find these or kill this thing. And there's supply drops that drop down. You have to clear an area. So you have to clear all the rocks out of the supply drop area so the supply drop can come in. And so there's all these little mini options or mini missions within it. And the second main type is an escort mission where you've got Bob the Miner. So Bob is a giant machine, and it's jokingly referred to as Bob. And you've got to mine the oil that's around to fill Bob so he can get to the end of the level and drop to the next level. You do that three times. At the end of it, there's this big rock that's got a mine, and you get what they did in it. Anyway, so there's gear, there's loot, there's all these other things that aren't in Vampire Survivors. You can change your loadout depending on what weapons you like to use. There is a random element, but there's four different classes of dwarf that you can pick from. And within each of those classes, there's three different kind of loadout settings for those dwarfs. So there's a heap of different variety there. There's
I'm watching the autoplay on Steam right now, and there are like bouncy pads.
Yeah, there are bouncy pads. There's five different biomes, and each of the different biomes have different kind of tricks to them that you need to know. So there's that bouncy pad biome. There's actually no healing in that. So the other biomes have these little red crystals you can mine for health, whereas in that biome there isn't one, but there's these crystals that you stand around and you heal from that. But the enemies also heal from that as well. So you've got to make the choice. You can destroy it, and you lose the healing ability, but it also stops the big boss from walking into it and healing too. So there's kind of this little strategy going
on.
That
would drive me absolutely fucking spare, I think. Like, I would be so frustrated with myself.
Yeah.
And there's waves that come through. It's a really addictive little version of this vampire. And I really like it. Like, I loved Vampire Survivors until I didn't. Like, it was like, okay, I've played enough of that one. Nothing's new now. There's nothing's changing. Whereas this one... it seems to be at, like, every time I play it, there's something new to do. You can master each weapon. So there's like these little mini sets of missions where you take just one weapon instead of four, and you have to master that weapon. So get through three levels with one weapon. There's special conditions. There's daily and weekly missions that come in with like particular mutators on the map that make it tougher, and you get bonus gear if you do it. They've really thought about how they can take the Vampire Survivors mold and expand it to a point where there's some depth to it. It's the perfect game for, like, I played half an hour before I jumped onto this podcast. It's the palate cleanser for my day in between reviews. It works great on handhelds.
Is this mostly a ROG Ally joint for you?
I've been playing mainly on my PC because it's usually when I'm sitting down, and it looks really good in ultra wide too. So gives you that more screen space, but it works beautifully on the ROG as well. It's a super fun game. It seems to be quite popular on Game Pass. A lot of my friends have been playing it as well, and seem to be enjoying it. So I mean, a lot of people are talking about Ball Cross Pit at the moment in the same vein, but I like this better than that. I think this is way more fun.
Fair enough. Yeah. It seems more visually coherent at the very least.
Yeah, it's super cool, especially if you've already got a Game Pass. And I don't think it's that expensive. It only just hit like about 3 weeks ago, it hit version 1. So it was in early access up to that point. But yeah, it's really good. I really like it. Worth checking out if you're in the mood for that sort
like
of thing.
Like about $15 Australian. I mean, I'm guessing based on the currency is almost 1-to-1 at the moment. So
yeah, it's very cool. Well worth checking out. But Sean has been possessed, possessor. What is he possessing, Sean?
Possessor. From Heart Machine. You know, they don't possess quite as many staff as they did. apparently they've been laying off people dramatically over the last couple of weeks. And I think I even saw somewhere the person that was running their PR, their in-house PR as well. So, you know, that's a great strategy in the lead up to
the
game.
Yeah, that's a risky-ass move, like just laying off the person who has access to all the socials.
Oof. Also means they won't be chasing you for the review embargo.
Look, they may have to chase me if it continues the way it's going. But we'll get to that. So Possessors is the story of Luca. The city she's in basically gets blown up. You know, this demon thing, you know, grabs her friend. She loses her legs and, you know, is basically crawling along, bleeding out. She meets Rem, this demon, who basically says, "Hey, I'll do you a deal. You let me possess you, I'll give you legs again, and you help me get back home." And she's like, "Yep, okay, done. Sign me up." So that is the start of your journey. And Possessors is a full-on Metroidvania. And look, it's big. It's big. Your main objective is to gather the keys to a vault, to allow Rem to be able to get home, you know, to access a portal to go back home. But after about, I'm at about 16 hours of playtime at the moment, and I haven't got one of them yet.
Ooh, that's a bit of a slow start.
Yeah.
Well, look, that's because, like, everything was going great until about 8 hours in when I got stuck.
Well, you've been stuck for 8 hours?
I have just been backtracking backwards and forwards, trying to find what I've missed. And the thing that keeps me going is I keep making these very subtle discoveries. See,
that's what Metroidvanias are good for.
But here's the thing. One of the little abilities that you get, dodge ability, so you can avoid an attack. What the game doesn't tell you is if you hold that dodge button down, you'll sprint. Which obviously a sprinting jump gets you a bit more distance.
Yeah.
You also have this whip that you can use to lash onto points and swing around a la Indiana Jones, right? Mm-hmm. But the game doesn't tell you that you can use said whip to attach on glowing bits of wall and pull those bits out.
Oh.
So I've been running past these things all the time because I'm like, oh, well, there must be some ability coming later that will allow me to access it. So I'm at the point now where, like, I know where I have to go to, like, you know, engage in some boss fights or areas that I haven't been, but I don't know if it's a bug or if there's something within this map that I have missed because I can't reach any of these places. You have little
Boy, it sounds like it'd be real handy if they had a PR team right now because that's the sort of thing you might want to like reach out for.
Yeah,
like I'm literally at that point where I'm like, I don't know, because you do meet NPCs throughout the game, and there's one of them where, you know, I ended up getting this little quest line thing for him and completing it. I've met these two others, but they only say like meh type things when I interact with them. So I'm like, are they waiting for me to do something first? Have they bugged out? I don't know. And it's just, I just keep trying because I keep discovering these little tricks. I'm like, okay, maybe there's something that I've missed that I'll now be able to access. But even then, like I've put you know, 8 hours trying to figure out what the fuck to do next. And as of
that
right now,
sounds like too much, dude.
Yep.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm
that
at the point
is a send in the email situation. Like it, that's
yeah. Yep. Because like, there's no quest markers or anything to guide it. I do know from I think one of the trailers that they have that there is a wall running ability. So I don't know if maybe I've missed picking that up from somewhere. But yeah, it's just
might be worth reaching out, I reckon.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. And you know, that's the big downside when you're reviewing games ahead of them coming out. You there's no walkthrough that you can look at and go, oh, that's nope. What I missed right there.
Or like when I was reviewing Gumbrella, which I never wrote the review for, because I ran into a progression breaking bug.
Yep.
So I kind of just turned into a de facto playtester.
I don't know if that's what has occurred here. It's supposed to be something with those NPCs.
Right? Yeah, the Hyperlight.
Because I'm looking at this, apparently Hyperlight Breaker came out this year, and the recent reviews are all like very negative, and I've never seen that on Steam before.
Yeah. Maybe, the money's running out and everyone's gone and things are going to shit.
Could be.
Which is like, sad.
I'm gonna do the old
email out and see
what can happen. Yeah.
Yeah, because
8 hours of like not knowing what you're doing is like too much.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you get this stuff called chroma from killing the enemies, right? Which you use to purchase from.
Oh, dude, I'm sure you've had a NPC great grinding missions. Success.
I've got like 4,000 of this stuff. I've cleared out every merchant thus far. So I'm just like, and just because I'm running around and you got to keep fighting to get through it, and I'm just, yeah, okay, bank it. Look, I enjoy the game. I like the game. I was actually invested in the story and how it's progressing and stuff like that. And I do like the play style. It's got a hand-drawn art style, which is actually like really just pretty, I find.
Yeah.
You know, there's, it's like, you look at the combat and the movement and it's not super smooth. It's kind of jittery, almost like in, Spider-Man, the Spider-Verse movies.
Oh, yeah.
How he's got that sort of that just off kilter frame rate. Yeah. Maybe not the same, but it feels very reminiscent of that. You know, to give that combat an distinctive style. And I mean, you do get the hang of, all right, boom, how to take on every different type of enemy and stuff and best ways forwards, as is custom in these sorts of games. But yeah, I'm just really, really stuck right now. And I would hate to think that I'm going to have to, you know, end up calling it there and writing the review based on that. Cause I think it would actually do the story in the game itself a disservice if that was to happen.
I would just not write the review, honestly, because one, that's extra work, and two, there's a very real chance that if there's a problem in the design, that they're just going to patch it out and the review is going to become completely irrelevant 2 weeks after it's published.
Yeah.
That's always.
There's also the part of me that thinks, oh, do I
wait for day one patch?
Or do I start a new game?
God, dude,
see
no,
if maybe I missed something there. Because I know what I'm doing roughly, and I know about these little things now. But then there's a part of me that goes, do I want to bother with that?
Yeah.
You know, that's if I spend another 8 hours and end up in the exact same spot, that's 8 hours down the drain.
Yep. Interesting. It is one of the, it's kind of an interesting look in some of the problems we get as early reviews.
Yeah.
I had something similar with Alan Wake 2, believe it or not. I had to get a save game file.
Oh, I do, based on what we were talking about before the
No, right towards the end, there was one sequence that just wouldn't activate, and it was pre-release bug that they had fixed in the day one patch, so they had to send me over a game file.
Save file
from that point to go forward. But, yeah. So, you know, they're there to help, and it happens, and it's one of the risks of playing early release, especially with the way games are developed these days, right up until release point, and then for a little while after.
At least you're online, because I still remember talking to some guys back in magazines, Still Mattered days. I think it was a preview event for the first Witcher game, and everybody had stories about, like, I'm just running this review going, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, I hope this, like, actually Or like, I'm taking good faith that this is a bug, or I'm like, yep. like you have to submit by deadline. And you have your print deadline as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On that note, we might leave it there. We're going to go and get a drink and a beverage, and Tim's going to pick some funky tunes to listen to in the break.
It's always funky, isn't it?
I like funky. Funky's
Funky
good for
Kong.
Podcast.
Oh, banana.
And we'll be back to talk about action games. And we're back. We're refreshed and we're ready to talk about action games. This year has kind of brought them back into the focus a little bit. There's been quite a few good titles that have come out. I've reviewed a couple of them myself. And we thought we'd have a look at the genre and why it's kind of fallen out of favor in a lot of ways. And now that it's a bit more popular, maybe we'll see a resurgence in some of the maybe classic franchises or even new ones. But to start things off, I thought we might talk about this year's batch. We'll start with Tim. Tim, has anything grabbed you this year that you feel like that fits that category of just straight up action?
Going back to my super frustration from the last episode, when I feel like this should be the year where Xbox has all the goodwill in the world and everything is going great. But no, they're still doing shit for Israel and genocide, and that ceasefire is not looking particularly stable. And also, firing a bunch of people and shit. But also, Ninja Gaiden 4 looks awesome, but I cannot justify it to myself buying it.
To be fair, Ninja Gaiden is not made by Xbox.
It is published by it, though.
They're just doing it's published by
the
Team
PS5
Ninja.
Copies of Xbox Play Game Studios written on the cover. Yeah,
I think they did the cloud work on it. That's as far as I can tell, but yeah. It is. It isn't really an Xbox game, but yes.
But it has a vibe, and that vibe, and this is maybe what brought about suggesting the entire subject, is that vibe is like, oh, this is a Platinum game, except this has Ninja Gaiden. So it is like 2010s coming back at you, baby.
The good thing about Ninja Gaiden 4 is, and I've played a lot of Ninja Gaiden 4, it is absolutely a Ninja Gaiden game. It is. So if you were a fan of the original Ninja Gaiden, or the 3D Ninja Gaiden games, it is absolutely that. But at the same time, it's been modernized beautifully with that Platinum sense of, I guess, bombast that they do in their best games.
Like Vanquish, when you're just jumping off missiles and basically, I think you probably punch a missile in the face at one point.
Yeah. So it's got that definitely got that Platinum kind of over the topness to it, but it also is absolutely Ninja Gaiden from top to tail, and it is tough, it's challenging, it'll push you, but it's absolutely worth it. And it is that pure action experience. There is no RPG elements. There is no, the only things you're buying are some health potions, and that's it, right? So this is a game that it relies on its systems purely, and it does really well of that too.
I kind of want to say thank Christ, because you said in the lead up you're talking about why these have fallen out of favor, and I think a huge part of it is I feel like the big marketing teams behind all of the big publishers don't know how to sell anything other than bigger and bigger and bigger. And this is how we've ended up with this open world slop almost.
That's just boring. It's just repeat.
What, each of these games are fine in themselves, but guys, Vanquish was really good.
Yeah.
Binary Domain didn't sell that well, I guess, but remember Gears of War was fucking huge. It could be fucking huge again.
It's still, and even, I guess, even the last Gears of War, which had open world-ish bits in it, it was still very linear. It was still,
that was a hub world, really.
Yeah. And, it was a bit like what Uncharted did as well, which is another great linear game, right? you know, we have these such fond memories of them, and it's odd that they just don't do them anymore. Rob, what about you? Have you found anything recently that fits that bill? And
to be honest, I've missed a lot of new release stuff this year for personal reasons.
Yeah.
I can't really. There's nothing that immediately comes to mind that I think that is sort of like, yeah,
that pure action.
That pure.
What about you, Sean, then?
Look, I wouldn't say pure action game. The first Berserker Kazan does come to mind. I mean, yes, it's a Souls-like, but it's very heavy on that action-style combat. Like, it puts you into mission situations, and it's pretty much, you know, from A, you're fighting your way through to point B. You know, you might do a little circle every once in a while to loop around and create a shortcut, but it very much fits that linear. And there's just lots of, you know, hack and slash action thrown at you constantly. You're going to die a lot. And it does have those RPG elements. So it's not a purely action game. But yeah, it definitely has that fast paced combat that you get from those games like Ninja Gaiden and Devil May Cry and stuff like that. Apart from that, probably the only other one would be, you know, again, not quite, but Elden Ring Nightreign, purely because it's a much faster game than the actual original Elden Ring. You know, to me, like I was always a very cautious player when I was playing Elden Ring, whereas with that, it was very much run in, go fuck shit up, you know, sort of more action oriented than watching out for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, there's one I really want to mention, and it's actually not 3D, it's 2D, and it's Shinobi.
I feel like 2D is like the space where this is it, because open world 2D is kind of almost a.
Yeah. So I thought Shinobi was going to be Metroidvania, but it's not. It's a straight action platformer, and it's brilliant. It's gameplay is bang on, like just beautiful systems, and it's just the sort of game you just get into a flow playing. There's no muss, no fuss. You get in, you kill a bunch of people as a cool ninja, and that's it, right? And I'm going to remember that game this year, and it's probably the biggest surprise for me of the year is not being a Shinobi fan.
You didn't grow up with Revenge of Shinobi, did you?
No, I didn't, because I wasn't a console player. And like, it's just been brilliantly brought back to life, and I cannot say enough for that game. So that's my real highlight. That and Ninja Gaiden are my real highlights in pure action games this year.
They had a 2D Ninja Gaiden as well, which obviously fits
that bill. I haven't played it yet, but I'm certainly keen to check it out.
It's totally solid. I did finally get around just to playing the demo of Shinobi, and like, this is a game I definitely need to buy now because, that game feels really fucking good, and it looks so good.
Oh, the art style is just perfect. They've just done a perfect job with that game. But all right, we might go back in time and look at what the classic ones that we've mentioned a few of them already, and ones that we've got a real love for. Maybe ones we go back and visit on a regular basis. Those straight up action games that just never seem to get old, no matter how many times you've finished them. Rob, do you have one of those that you really just love and you want to shout from the stars? And I mean, you've got a fairly long history to go with here. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Bionic Commando on the NES / Bionic Commando Rearmed on the 360 and PS3.
Yeah.
I think that's like, it's got stages where you have to, like, you have a world map, but it's linear within each stage.
Yeah.
And I really think that what that game did, because that was like translating, you know, the whole policy thing of like NES versions have to be distinct, and it turned it from what was a pretty run of the mill platformer that you couldn't jump to one hell of a great action game. And also it's thematically appropriate in 2025 because even though it was muted out of the original localization, you take on the Fourth Reich. So at the end, you get to fire a bazooka into a helicopter carrying a resurrected 1940s dictator.
Nice. Nice.
And his head blows up.
Let's talk about Wolfenstein again.
God, okay. Weirdly, like, those Wolfenstein games play just fine, but it's like the writing somehow in those games that really made them sing. But if we're going to do like games that are like weirdly relevant again, or became weirdly relevant super fast, is one that I wanted to get to a bit earlier, in connection to Ninja Gaiden 4, which was, God, Metal Gear, Rising Vengeance was so fucking good. Never mind this psychotic US politician who was screaming "Make America Great Again" in the final boss in like the game that came out in 2013. Like, that game's story was dumb as balls, but like somehow,
so is America.
Some way, just fucking prophetic as shit. Like, just.
I never played it. It was one of those ones I just missed because I had no love for Metal Gear at that point. So it just kind of...
It's not a Metal Gear game. It's Metal Gear in name and characters, but...
Oh.
It was my favorite Platinum game up until I got put in charge of a Nier title.
Yeah. That's almost more of an RPG.
Is Automata, could probably justify talking about here a little bit because, like... It was made by Platinum, and Platinum was like, we'll keep your upgradey weird systems in place and whatnot, but also the combat is just going to be really good.
Yeah. Well, on that Platinum vibe, I think one that deserves absolute praise is Bayonetta 2.
So happy you went to Bayonetta 2 as opposed to the first one, actually.
Oh, yeah, no. Bayonetta 1 is fine. It just feels like a reskin Devil May Cry, but also it doesn't feel quite as good, to be honest. And Bayonetta 2 is next level.
I remember, fantastic. Yeah, at some point Bayonetta 2 just clicked.
Yeah.
Like, the first time I think I had to face something that was a boss as a regular enemy, and at some point all the controls just fell into place.
Yeah.
Nirvana.
Yeah. It was so good. And 3 wasn't a patch on it, to be honest. Sadly, but yes, Bayonetta 2
one was
so good.
Not trapped on the Wii U because I guess they did port it to the Switch, but it probably is the least played of them.
And it was so very good. So very good.
There should be a PC version of that. There isn't, is there?
No, there isn't. It's a Nintendo exclusive. They bought the rights. Sean, what about you? Have you got a classic that you loved and you play over and over?
Oh, look, does the Final Fight series count?
Oh, yes, it does.
The good old beat 'em up, you know, Final Fight, Streets of Rage, fuck, give me the old school Double Dragon even. Yeah. You know, I remember mashing the way with my A and B buttons on the NES with my younger brother. And then, you know, inevitably, because one would die, we'd end up punching and kicking each other.
Sure.
As all brothers
sibling
do.
Griefing. Yeah, that stuff.
It's your fault. having a quick little look through the interwebs, one of the games that I reviewed, Scarlet Nexus, is very much a hack and slash action game in which it's a very linear story. I still don't know half of what the fuck was going on in that story. But I enjoyed the game, you know, and the combat was really cool. The way they integrated, you know, the companions that you had, and their specific abilities to be able to, you know, mix in with yours. Also, roguelike, but, Sifu.
Oh, yeah, cool.
That's just literally running around kicking the living shit out of a bunch of people.
That seems like an incredibly Sean game as well, actually.
Yes.
Taps into the inner Shaolin.
Oh, look, I'd like to think that I could fight like that, but I can't. I'd be too winded after the first fight.
Yep.
After beating not one person. So just have a heart attack.
Awesome.
It is telling that you went there and not to Celeblade, which you also reviewed.
Yeah, but I didn't really like Stellar Blade. Really felt like, and I did comment on the jiggle effects. I think that game was made almost more for the jiggle effects than for the actual gaming experience itself, especially with some of the costumes on offer. Like, it was passable, but you know.
It's not a bit dead or alive volleyball.
Yeah. Well, it's almost exploitative. You know,
it's sort of weird thing. Like how like Bayonetta like totally gets away with this and so much of it just has
I think a lot of it's
the character being empowered.
Yeah. Like, whereas Bayonetta's a powerful witch and she's in charge of everything and she's sexy, but
I think it was Hyper actually where one of the writers just said the difference is this is my crotch in your face, bitch, as opposed to Teehee, look where the camera got.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's definitely you know,
like
yeah.
At that the risk power of thing. Sounding like a little bit too ew, Bayonetta's got like the sexy librarian vibes.
Yeah,
well, it's definitely step on me, mummy, all the way through.
Whereas Stella Blade's the girl with daddy issues that's just trying to get attention.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. There's innocence. I think you know Bayonetta knows. The character knows that, you know, this is who she is. She's a dominant, powerful woman that kind of wades into her femininity in a really strong and powerful way, whereas a lot of those games like Dead or Alive Volleyball and Stellar Blade, it's more about just, you know, youngish girl in tight clothes that's just a bit off, like, right? You can be sexy. Sexy's fine.
Don't forget the jiggle physics.
Yeah, you know, so that's always the thing. I always comment my favorite way of judging this thing. If you would have felt embarrassed as a 13-year-old if your mum walked in, saw you playing it, it's probably too far. You know, if it's like getting caught with the swimsuit edition of Sports this Illustrated, that's too far.
Literally why I had to unlock an extra costume for Ivy before I played her in Soul Calibur.
Yeah, because it's just not, you know, if mum doesn't think it's
if
right,
you look at
it's
it
not
just go,
right.
Come on, I think it's
like, yeah, you know, that's just no.
Yeah, there was a moment when my wife saw me playing Stellar Blade and questions were asked.
Yeah.
And I'm
I
like,
swear,
hey,
honey, I swear it's for a review.
We have digressed.
But anyway, action games. One I wanted to mention, which is a funny one, and it's kind of an odd one in the series, is DMC. Which is
from Bayonetta. We're just going back to the heritage now.
Well, we are. So, but DMC is the Ninja Theory spin-off.
Oh, okay, we're talking about the one that I could actually play. All right.
Yeah. So Ninja, kind of Ninja Theory got the reins of the Devil May Cry franchise and did their own spin on it, which was like a prequel to the first game. And Dante had black hair, and you know, it upset
people
a
lost
whole
their shit
bunch
because
of
he didn't
people.
Have a white mop in his head.
Yeah, you know, and they even made a joke in the game, like at one point.
Yeah,
a white mop
like
falls
I think a mop does fall in his head.
Yeah, it does, and he looks in the mirror and goes, "Nah," and gets rid of it. You know, it's got a bit of that like that era's kind of emo. Goth metal sort of vibe to it, but I really enjoyed that game. I thought now I think apart from Devil May Cry 5, which is obviously the most modern one, it holds up better than the old DMC games. So I think right now it's still a very very playable straight up action game with really cool fighting system.
Give it another go because I like. And, I mean, I also I'm a weirdo who liked Heavenly Sword, like,
yeah,
quite a lot. As well, more than God of War 2, which is also out at the time.
Yep.
And I think it's just something about this. And a lot of this, I think, is personal, and obviously more people like a certain thing than another. But I think Devil May Cry and the first Bayonetta in particular, like very much a memorizing combo kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Which is not me, whereas there was more of a system that you could figure out on the fly to the way that Ninja Theory did it. And I feel like Bayonetta 2 probably like leaned into that a little bit as well.
I think you're right, and that's I think what Ninja Gaiden does as well, really well. All of them except 3. We don't talk about that.
Yes, we do. You made me play it for the site.
But yeah, you know, it does that really well in that flow, and you don't have to memorize combos. You can just kind of work your way through the systems, and it becomes almost second nature as you play, which is really
like
cool.
Stances are, I think, something that worked for me a lot better than, like, it's like, okay, I'm in a defensive mode now, I'm in offensive mode now, like, this is useful for this is useful for that, as opposed to, like, X, X, Y, X, square, square, X, Y, square, square, X, and, like, I cannot hold that in my brain, like, every
It feels like the patience to commit it to muscle memory. Yeah, those old dial-in combos that games like Mortal Kombat and that used to have, where you just literally, you just remembered the button presses and just punched them in like you were typing sort of thing. And yeah, that's how it worked. And it was never as natural as something that just kind of works within the mechanics of the system.
God, I really hope that when Virtua Fighter 6 comes out by the Yakuza team, so Huso has to like it, I think, by default.
I like Virtua Fighter.
Everybody's going to realize it is the best fighting game for this reason.
as long as Kiryu and Ichiban are special characters.
Oh, God. I would be upset, I think, a little bit if they were not, actually.
Yeah, I know. It feels...
Like, you make them pay DLC, but like that has to be an appearance.
And it's DLC I would happily pay for. All right, so I think we've talked about these kind of ninja fighting style ones. What about things like, and we mentioned it briefly, Uncharted, you know, these single player adventure games that are genuinely linear. Gears of War fits in there. You know, these titles that are also action. They're not really RPGs. They're just telling a story and you have a lot of fun. Indiana Jones recently, you know, great. It's a first person one, which kind of blurs the lines, but it's just action adventure straight up. Go from point A to B.
Super weird because like Gears and Uncharted were like the figureheads for like an entire generation of consoles.
Yeah.
And it's wild how fast we moved past them. Like the Xbox One got a Gears game. PS4 got a Uncharted and a half, I guess, effectively.
Yeah. Two Gears games on the Xbox One.
All right, they both technically got two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, 4 came out. Weirdly, like almost Capcom's, like I forgot, like Resident Evil 4 is maybe the thing that kicked a lot of this off, and that remake was really fucking good.
Yeah, it was. I've been really enjoying it. I never played the original, but yeah, really enjoying it.
And that's like a whole special thing with like, because to keep within the horror, like Resident Evil 4 is not a pure horror game. It is a horror themed action game, but I don't know, Capcom has figured out like somebody there like knows how to like make you just barely survive almost every encounter. Like you'll die a handful of times, and most of the time you will not, but you will feel like you got fucking lucky.
Now, I think that's the trick to the Resident Evil series in general, right? You know, just scraping through by the skin of your teeth.
We spoke about Roguelikes earlier. The one that like has come back to me this generation a lot is actually Returnal.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That combat is sweet.
It is so good. And I think that makes me think of that in line. Because when I think about it, I'm really thinking of like a very... I'm thinking Vanquish, I'm thinking Binary Domain, I'm thinking Revengeance. Like these... Actually, most Platinum development mostly and all Sega published games that kind of like feel like what the future of the games were, I felt like on the Mega Drive era. Like this kind of is like this future that almost existed.
Yeah,
and that kind of like fits in the vibe of those a lot. And they're like, it's just you're always moving. It is not a cover shooter by any stretch. And they also almost stealth patched a PS5 Pro patch in, so now the image quality is like just mwah.
Yeah, it is sensational on PC if you've got that version. It's one of the best Sony ports out there for taking advantage of the power. It's really, really good on
and
PC.
Balancing like moody atmosphere story while also being a fast-paced as hell shooter. And the I finished it. I thought I'd finished it, and then I found the like clever little way that they reset it when you're done. But then I start a new game, and it gets harder, so I haven't gotten that much farther. But shit changes. There's a snow level. I didn't... Spoiler, everybody. There's a fucking snow level if you get good enough.
I don't ever think I got out of the first biome. I really wanted to love... Yeah, I love Housemarque's arcade stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I bounced off Returnal. I was heartbroken.
Yeah,
did I bounced off it?
I love their arcade stuff too. I really loved Alien Nation. I played that so much. And
Next Machina.
Next Machina. Last one, was the real simple twin stick. That was just yeah.
There's always going to be somebody who gets left behind when a developer changes key a little bit. I mean, my personal feeling is they found a really good way to, like, take what they were good at and, like, step it up a little bit. Like, Yep. I feel like even if I didn't like it, I would still respect that they found
and that's the thing. Trajectory. I absolutely respect it.
Yeah.
But I'm just sad that I bounced off it. And that's the same thing. I was looking at like when they announced Saros. It's yeah, just it's, like,
which oh, is Vanquish. Man, Returnal 2. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, gonna that be glorious, like, but it's not for me.
I may have to murder Paul that. To get like a hands on my review key for like Saros or something. Like, I haven't actually. Has anybody played Evil West?
Yes.
That's always like being it. In the like, there have been so many times I've almost bought that game.
It is a fun, like straight A title, you know, the sort of thing that Midway or someone would have published back in the day. Yeah, cool combat system, dumb as shit story about monsters in the Old West. And yeah, just an unapologetically stupid, straight linear action game. And fun because of it. Like, it's never going to be remembered as the greatest thing ever, but as a $30-$40 game, you'd hard to fold.
I found a PS5 copy for like $10 and didn't buy it, and like went back like the week later, and of course somebody else like picked it up.
Yeah,
and
yeah. It's just that stupid fun combat, really tight combat system. Once you get all the things unlocked and things like that, you can create some really fun combat scenarios with it, and challenging. It's not easy by any means, but yeah. Well worth it.
Actually, another one that's really, really challenging, Ghost Runner.
Yeah.
One hit kill with everything, you know. You can kill everything in one hit, but they can kill you in one hit. So it's like, you know, it's got that high speed, high stakes feel.
It's almost like Trials or something like that, though, in the way it in that you got to get that perfect run every time. You know, it feels like Trials or Trackmania, even, you know, where you're just constantly restarting the level, resetting, trying to get that perfect run. Yeah.
And then you come back to that level after you've done a couple more, and you just blitz through the whole thing and just be like, "Fuck, I don't know what I had so much trouble with."
Yes.
You got good.
You got good.
You succeeded at the get good.
Get good, scrub.
First time for everything.
Yes, but I think we're going to see more straight action games. I think
we have, like, budgets are going to, like, it's getting too expensive to make other stuff, and I think a lot of developers are feeling, even, like, again, Star Wars Outlaws, for example, I don't think that game was a huge success. It was very good.
Yeah.
But you could probably make two or three very good action games for the same amount of money that it costs to make these giant-ass open-world games, and also, like, not every game can be 50 to 100 hours. People don't have that much time.
No. To play a game, and this year, like I said, with Ninja Gaiden, it was 12, 13 hours from start to finish on normal difficulty.
That's a sales point at this point. I could still finish that in.
It was just perfect for me. And there's so much, like, it's so good that I want to go back and play at a harder difficulty because I really enjoyed it. And that option's there. But if you just want 12 hours of fun,
it's too it's easy just, if you have to, I guess.
Yeah. It's easy. It's just so good that there's games with a start and finish. That's why I've always had a soft spot for like Call of Duty campaigns, because I know I get 8 hours of nonsense, but it's straight up bombastic Michael Bay bullshit, and that's fine. That's good. And I know I'm done. Happy.
The Battlefield series very much the same.
Yeah.
Battlefield 6 has just actually brought back
the campaign
after ditching it in 2042.
Yeah.
So, that's just you going through big explosions, you know, mowing down people, you know.
I think
jumping around. Does anything as insane as what happens in Vanquish, if any of you played Vanquish?
I've played Vanquish. It's not quite as insane as that. No.
I want to see that again. I want to see a Vanquish 2. I don't think I ever will, but I would like to see like Platinum make that style of game again, which I do not think is impossible.
No, I think there's a very good chance that they may tap that well again. I think there's more demand for it now. I think people are starting to get to the point where they're over open worlds, and developers are also overspending bajillion the dollars on every game. It's either got to be live service and hope that it lands for people to make money.
I think finally, actually, a lot of the suits are starting to realize it.
Yeah.
oh, what we've been doing with this has been really dumb. We've ruined an entire generation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, like, I feel like this year has been good for games. Like, this is like the equivalent of 2015.
It's kind of a reset point.
Like, the thing was, 2015 was like a year and change after the last consoles came out. How long have these consoles been out for?
Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah. And it feels like they are just starting.
It just feels like, it's weird because it feels like exciting because, oh, I feel like every game I play now, like, this is a PS5-ass game.
Yeah.
It took a long time to get here.
Yeah.
Really did. Really, really did. And it's... I don't know. I think the diminishing returns of hardware is another problem too. So, you know, but that's a whole other topic. That's a whole long discussion to have.
Well, at some point they're going to announce the PS6, and it's going to be, whenever it happens, it's going to be earlier than it feels like it needs to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. All right then. Do we have any other shout outs, any other things on Action Games we want to talk about before we sign off this evening?
Anyway. Weirdly, no. I've just got a note here, which is like, for all the nostalgia I've got talking here and all this like Sega vibes, it's like, I realize it's ironic for me because like, this is not an area the Dreamcast was strong with at all.
Actually, I got one.
Yep.
I got one that will hold a special place in my heart from when I was a young child, go down to the local bowling alley. And they had the original four-player Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That is straight arcade action. You cannot deny it.
It's also how we know this is an Australian podcast, because it's either a fish and chip shop or bowling alley or a skating arena.
Or the Video Easy. The Video Easy at town had a couple of games too. Yeah,
I never did. They're all in the fish and chip shop. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I think all four of us are of that age where arcades hold a great chunk of nostalgia for us. And
such a weird nostalgia, though. Because, again, this is how you know what I'm going to say now. Again, Typecast is an Australian podcast, because everything was a dollar a play. So I did not get to play them that much. And I remember like learning it was like 20 cents or something in the US. I'm like, well, what the fuck?
I mean, I remember them being 60 cents, then going to a bar.
I remember 40 cents.
Ooh, 40 cents for Gold Max. Macquarie. Where I grew up, that was a 20-cent arcade.
Everything I remember growing up was like started at a dollar. If it was 20 cents, I probably could have gotten my parents to like buy me a lot more credits than I was able to talk them into when I was like 10 years old or whatever.
So this arcade, any standard arcade machine was 20 cents. Any of the racing or gun games was a dollar. So that's how they ran.
That's a big markup.
Yeah.
That's a big markup to play some Daytona.
But yeah, absolutely. So they had Daytona, Cigarelli, and those things. They were and Lethal Enforcers and Point Blank and things like that. A bit later, they were all a dollar. Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Metal Slug, you know, all those ones that were at every arcade, they were only 20 cents. So actually playing a full game of NBA Jam was feasible instead of just playing one quarter and going, now I've got to put in another dollar. That was bullshit.
I guess my equivalent, we've completely steered off track. The time zone super session, I think I did do
the
a 2 hour
super session.
Early in the morning. Awesome. It was like $20, and I guarantee you the amount of credits we went through to finish Metal Slug 2.
Yeah.
itself. Like,
all right,
I was double pumping the guns in Time Crisis.
Nice.
Couldn't play Daytona at all though, because there was a bunch of like teenage kids who literally just got on those machines and sat there for 2 hours.
Yep. Yep.
Jerks. They knew what was happening. You know, I mean, they were jerks, but also like, yeah, they knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Props. Identified what they wanted early. All right, we might leave it there before we get too distracted thinking about the classic arcade days. Rob, what you got cooking, mate?
So we've had the recreation review. Was the last thing I'll have up.
That would have been a couple of weeks ago at least now.
Yeah, that would have been a few weeks ago, you know, which I talked about in the last episode. I haven't got anything in the bag at the moment.
What about on your wonderful nostalgia YouTube channel?
I'm hoping that by the time we get this out, I'll have the next thing, which is going to be a look at basically arcade nostalgia, a bunch of games that are in the Arcade Archive series from Hamster, just a bunch of those, which look kind of neat. I think that's a series that's really important for just preservation. So yeah, I needed a simpler episode to work on that I could sort of break apart just because of some real life things at the moment.
Nice. Excellent. Sean, if you ever finish this game, I assume there will be a review.
We'll find out. If it's appeared before you hear of this podcast, then you know I've beaten it. If not, then you know the reasons why.
Fair.
I'm just going to be plugging away, trying not to break my controller, praying for an email from the PR gods that will give me guidance on what's going on with this game and where I should go.
I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Hopefully.
keep your eyes out.
Tim, you're buggering off on us.
I mean, yeah, I'll be traveling pretty soon, although this does remind me, around about the time this episode goes live is around about the time I'm going to start reminding Paul that he promised me a Metroid Prime 4 code. Many, many moons ago.
Just start now. Just be subtle and go, hey, you heard anything about Metroid?
That trailer that came out whenever it was looked pretty good, huh? Samus on a motorcycle.
Excellent. Well, I've probably got a bunch of shit up by this point. I'm working on Painkiller right now. It should be up soon.
It should be probably up in the past by the time this
episode comes out. Yeah, well, it'll be up. It will be up by the time this comes out. And who knows what else will be.
I feel a little bit bad for you there. Based on some of the reviews that have already gone live, I'm kind of glad I did not take that key.
It's fine.
It's fine is a general gist.
Absolutely fine. It's actually quite a lot of fun. I'm playing it with my son. He's playing on his PC and I'm playing with mine. So that adds a lot of fun to it.
That helps. I don't have a teenager to play with.
It's just fine. It's not shit. It's not crap. It's not awesome. It's just fine. Anyway, so I'll have a ton of stuff. We'll also be getting into the end of year things over at Player 2 very soon because it's getting there. So keep an eye out for gift
Christmas
guides.
Christmas lists, Game of the Year.
Game of the Year stuff. And, of course, Sadistic Santa will be coming soon too. So keep an eye out for that.
God, how many more episodes have we got? Like, only it's got to be like one or two episodes
left.
There's
not many left before Santa comes knocking.
He's gonna be knocking on the door pretty fucking soon.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you for joining us all for this episode of the Pixelcast. Make sure you head over to player2.net.au and check out everything the team has written. And have a good time. We'll catch you next time. See ya.
Also, yes. Jesus, I'm looking at the calendar right now. The next episode may actually be Sadistic Santa.